This is the beginning of class 2.
Jikden means Jikden is this Tibetan word for the world, the suffering world. In Sanskrit, it's just one word, loka. But in Tibetan, this is one of the early translations. They tried to catch the meaning. They made a new word. Jik means to be destroyed. Ten means a basis. So your body is a Jikden, and your world is a Jikden. It's going to, sooner or later, it will collapse. It will fall apart. The world, meaning you and your environment, are both perishable. Perishable things. That's Jikden. So Jikden means the world. It can also mean planet. And in Buddhism, a planet is a complicated thing. It's not just a round ball with people standing on it. Okay? That's a long story. I won't go into it. That's the third chapter of the Abhidhamma. But basically, it's got all these levels. There's many levels that we can't see. You know, there's the hell realms, there's preta realms. On each planet, they have their own hell realms, they have their own preta realms, they have their own partial hell realms, they have their own deity realms. You can't see almost any of it. Yeah.
The Amidala isn't the English type of translation,
right? It's been, since it's the main book of Southern Buddhism, it's been translated many times by Sri Lankan scholars. There was a great French translation made by Sri Lankan scholars. There was a great French translation made by Poussin. I don't speak any French. So,
but is there any English?
And then someone translated that into English, Leo Pruden. And that's the auto commentary.
Is that worth, you think?
It's pretty decent. It's very expensive. It's, I don't know, $200.
Oh, really?
Four.
Is it, is it very big?
It's four volumes. And it's well done. I mean, I kind of like it. I haven't read much of it. And then we translated this the first time August comes through. But we haven't published it yet. About, we started 20 years ago. Finished 10 years ago. Yeah, we didn't try it. We never got it cleaned up. It's on the disc. You can look at it. I can give you the disc.
Play but it's in English?
Yeah. Yeah, with the root text from the commentary. Jigden Nato means various, multitude. Okay, Nato means many different kinds. For example, Nato Fema in the higher in the secret teachings is a special multicolored lotus has different colors. That's Nato. So Nato means all these different kinds. Ge means they come. So the whole first line of the fourth chapter is the most important line in the whole thing. It says, what did the third chapter talk about?
Such a big world that the world came from.
Yeah. And the beings in it.
Yeah.
And now he's opening up the fourth chapter. It's called Tam Jorwa. It's called Building a Bridge in Tibetan. Good composition. It's supposed to relate it to the last chapter. So he says, and if you want to know where all these different planets come from, of the universe, and they have outlines of the planets, of, you know, this... There's this galaxy over there, there's this galaxy over there, you know, that planet's going to be around this long. All those different planets and all those different beings living on all those planets came from Lei. What's Lei?
Karma.
And that's really, you know, it, you know, last class we were saying, if you came out of it, if you ever did come out of it, with a little inkling of what you might have some strong... Let's say some decent foundation that you might continue on after you die, and that you were here before. That's enough. That was a big achievement. This class, you're supposed to now focus on actions, your actions, what you do. And then if you get some kind of instinct or feeling for how that creates your world, you know, how that actually determines your world and you, that you and your world are fluid, and they're blank, actually. They could have become anything, depending on your actions now. And what you have now, whether you like it or not, the things you like and the things you don't like, all came from karma. I mean, Geshe Dargi, my first teacher, he used to say, whether you like it or not, the things you like and the things you don't like, all came from karma. I mean, Geshe Dargi, my first teacher, he used to say, the feeling of the fan on your cheek is everything from there on up. Is from karma, everything.
Right. Everything comes from karma. And karma is caused by ignorance and attachment and all that. But what caused ignorance and attachment? If mind is what? What is mind? In other words, what makes it go into karma?
It's like original sin, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been lousy forever, okay? I mean, if you're in the last class, you know that there was no beginning to your mind, because there was always that death that came just before your first moment of consciousness. And that death, because you have the kind of consciousness you have now, was that you had certain kinds of misperceptions of death, and therefore you had to take a rebirth.
Yeah, but there was
awesome.
A beginning for karmic.
No beginning to all the universe. No, I mean, the universe has
but
come and gone.
Mind is endless. And karma is endless.
I just did it. We'll talk about that.
You sure?
I mean, I know. Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It's beginningless. It is beginningless.
So karma is beginningless.
Yeah, it is beginningless. You know, we've already proven that in the last course. We took, you know, it was like three, 4 months to prove that. The class was endless. The point was beginningless.
So then if it's beginningless, it's endless.
Yeah.
Then how can we even think that that's possible?
You can purify it. You can't destroy it. You can't destroy mind. You put an atomic bomb in its
No, I'm talking about karma. I'm not talking about mind.
Oh. There's a kind of
Abhidharma. like you cannot get rid of dharma.
You can get rid of your ignorance, that's beginning. You can get rid of suffering, that's beginning. Just because it's always been that way doesn't mean it's always been that way. Okay. Then it's not okay. So that's Vasubandhu's first statement about karma. Why is he saying that? He wants to point out, he's trying to point out two different things. And the first one is this. Who's he mostly fighting with? Do you remember? It's about the same people that
done
it. No, that's 300 years later. Mutekpa is a general word for non-Buddhist, a Hindu. And he's fighting with Hindus who believe in three different things.
Can you say that sentence, the whole sentence, before you go into the next one?
Yeah. Why don't I give you the reading? There. The multitude of worlds come from karma. Actually, here, these cause the multitude of worlds.
Which would you prefer us to know?
I'd use these cause the multiple in the world. Because that's what you're reading.
So what
cause
is
or cause that?
Cause.
So where does the basis to be destroyed fit in here?
That's the translation. That's the literal meaning of the Tibetan word for world.
Oh.
Jikken can also mean planet. Jikdenba means a layman, a worldly person. Okay. And then Paboga says, well, Jikdenba means anybody who hasn't been empty. It's a worldly person. Anyway, three things that Dhammasa Dharma Kirti. Vasubandhu is fighting against three ideas. One of the main reasons he wanted to write that first line was because people in India, when he was there, believed in these three things. One of these three things.
Yeah, they picked it.
Say,
Jitapa,
Tho,
Tho,
and Wangchu.
Wangchu.
Okay, Jitapa, Ju means cause, mm-hmm. and Tapa means unchanging. Yu means cause, and Kapa means unchanging. The second one is Soho means main, or principle. That's the word for principal teachings of Buddhism in that little book's title. Soho means main, or principle. Okay. You can translate it as primal energy. Right? Primal energy. And then the third one is Wangchu. Wangchu gets the Tibetan translation of Ishvara, and you can think of it as Indra, it doesn't much matter. Indra. Indra is a Hindu god, Hindu deity. those were the three big ideas around in Vasubandhu's time. For what?
Existence.
Where the world came from. Alright? Where the world came from. You talk about it was impersonal. Yutapa was like a Big Bang Theory or something like that. Okay, it's a cause, but nothing came before it. Nothing caused it. Okay. It was the first cause of all.
So it's an uncaused cause.
You could say uncaused cause.
Original cause.
Unchanging cause. If it's uncaused, it's unchanging. So it's the cause of all causes. Not necessarily about being. So is like it's hard to describe. But it's like a being, but it's not like a being. It's the energy in the universe that creates things.
It's not the energy itself.
It's hard to describe because it doesn't exist. But but anyway, it's for example, they believe there were 25 different divisions, Samkhya school. They believed there were certain numbers of existing phenomena, and there was this energy or being, you can say primal energy, okay? And he had a permanent part and an impermanent part, and the impermanent part does things and makes the world, and things like that. It's like a primal, it's an energy behind the universe.
The force.
The force. vague ideas.
The force.
Those are very well developed. The ideas are hard to discuss. This is like the cause of all causes. This is like the force, really. That's not very technical. And Wangchuk is, that's a creator god. okay, a creator being. All right, that's a guy who, I think they say he stirred up the ocean with a big spear. I don't know what happened. Something. I don't think of him as feminine. I think it's a him. I think Ishvara is
Ishvara.
Well, I think a lot of Tibetans say Indra. Indra is actually something else. But they get, I mean, if you go to India and try to ask the difference between Indra and Ishvara, it's pretty confused now. There's hundreds of Hindu pantheon of thousands of deities. And if you ask a Gujarati what's the difference between Krishna and Ishvara and Indra, he's good. Well, he's blue and he's but that's about it. It's all confused now. As far as I can tell, I'm not a very good man. I don't know much about it. The older schools were better, and they're well presented in the Majjhimika school. You can study the real old Hindu schools better in Majjhimika than you can if you go to India nowadays. So those are the three. Those three things, according to the non-Buddhists, caused the world.
Didn't you say Xoa was also being?
They think of him as a being.
And so there's a difference between Xoa and Mahjong.
I don't know much.
Oh.
he's more personalized. This is like his new soul. Sometimes he's not personalized. It's a primal energy that exist behind all things.
Sounds like paganism.
Like what?
Like paganism. That's what they believe.
Yeah, it's
kind of.
It's like that. Gyutso is explained better in Majjhimika than I'm explaining it now. But anyway, there's these three things. These two are unchanging. Maybe that's a good thing to say. This one is changing. These two are unchanging. This one is changing.
How is Soul unchanging?
Excuse me?
How is Soul unchanging?
He's just supposed to be unchanging.
This is a being?
Yeah. Isn't that what the Hindus say?
Two is Soa is a being, isn't it? Two?
She asked me that. Generally you think of him as a being, but it's not very clear. I'll check. Gyutso is not. It's like a being. But it's like parts of his body. It's a kind of energy. Number three is definitely a being. Number one is definitely not a being. Number two is. I'll check and see if it says being anywhere. I mean, it doesn't say being, but when they describe him in the Samkhya school, it sounds sort of like a being. One of the 25 qualities is being, capital B, like Shirikyo. Anyway, so those are the three things that they said the world came from. There are two arguments against those three, and you already know them. Why? What's the big argument? Against this one. We can say argument A. There were a lot of them, but I don't know if you remember any of them.
I just remember the one, I remember the one where it couldn't be a personal being, because that being would have had to suffer.
Yeah, that was one of Dharmakirti's. Because he's perfect. Perfect, you have to suffer.
Wow.
He's permanent, he never was suffering before. He never changed. That's not the argument for Vasubandhu. Vasubandhu is concentrating on this argument that a being could have made the world in one shot. He could have made all of history in one moment. Since each period doesn't depend on the period before it, the 19th century doesn't depend on the 18th century to happen. You can skip straight from the 17th to 19th century. 17th and 19th century can happen at the same time. There's no reason for there to be, what do you call it?
Stages
or any progression in time.
Linear.
It doesn't have to be linear. It'll be one instant in time, because he can create the whole thing in one moment. There's no need for him to. The fact that it takes time, the fact that the events of the 17th century have to cause the events of the 18th century is a problem if you believe in a creator God. It shouldn't require that. A God should be able to, someone who creates the universe should be able to create it and then it would just end in the same instant. There's no reason for something to have to come before something else to make it happen. Because he's making everything happen. Those things aren't causing each other. He's causing everything. And that, you know, it sounds silly, it's actually quite correct. You just have to get used to it. You have to think about it. If you know, we're all made by a person and doesn't depend on any causes, you know, he could just make it all, everything could happen in one moment and get it over with. You know, the cavemen and the dinosaurs and everything else could happen in, and the space shuttle could all get, he could get it over with in the same second. That would be a quality. It doesn't have to happen in stages. The reason it happens in stages is that something has to cause it. The argument against these two, both of these are supposed to be unchanging. And if the cause of things is unchanging, then things have to be unchanging. Things could never get old, things could never decay, things could never rise again. Things could never fluctuate. There would be no fluctuation of anything in the universe. Nothing would fluctuate. Because it was caused by a permanent, unchanging thing. The idea, why does the wall get older? Because the energy that started it had a limit. And the energy that started it is wearing out. It's like a curve like that, right? And it created the wall. And then the energy is like dissipating even as we talk. The wall is disintegrating as we talk. And you can see that. Sooner or later this wall must fall down. Hopefully we'll not be in here. And that's fluctuation. A permanent thing which never changes or never goes like that couldn't cause that. If the cause is like gets strong, 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 creates a thing and then weakens, then the thing has to do that too. If the thing is doing that, if the thing is getting stronger and then disintegrating, then the cause have to have been the same. Therefore, these two can't cause the world. Those are the main arguments. What do you care? There are things called dipas. You know dipa? Dipa? Dipa means the shadow. But it's obscuration, mental shadow. And we have them. And they come from your, they are the presuppositions with which you grow up. They are the things you hear from your childhood. And now your mind is soaked in them. And you don't even notice it. You don't know it. So arguments like these sound a little funny, or they sound like not very relevant or something, but that the jibba we have is that we really do believe that the world came from some being, because that's the way we grew up. It just happens to be what people told us as we grew up. There's no evidence for it. There's no logic to it. There's no reasonableness to that statement, that there's some guy that we can't see and he made the world. It doesn't make any sense. But since we grew up with it, we take it seriously. You know, God is spelled with capital G. It's on the coins and on the money. You know, it pervades your world, and you believe it. Part of you believes it. That's a jipa. And you have to try to break that down, because if you want your world to become happy without suffering, if you want to remove the suffering in your world, you have to come to a real strong intellectual understanding that your world comes from your actions, from what you do. And as long as the other thought is, you know, 10% of your mind, taking up 10% of your mind space, you won't really act properly, because you don't really believe it. You know, 10% or 20% of your mind doesn't quite accept it, so you won't follow the rules of karma. And then you'll never get out. You always have some suffering. So that's, you have to work on that. It's important to know where the world came from. It's not just philosophers arguing and Buddhists fighting with the non-Buddhists and things like that. It's something you have to just give up all the old ideas, and you have to think, you know, this world came from what I did, and my future depends precisely on what I do now.
I'm trying to understand how these three points fit into the whole chapter overview of karma. So is this the idea is these schools had this position? So to begin his chapter on karma, he wanted to refute the nature of existence before he moved on to other things.
He's trying to, what's his whole ying good? What's purpose. The ultimate goal? Yeah, what's he trying to do? he's trying to get you out of suffering. So he has to show the process by which suffering was created. And basically, your suffering is your world and you. So he's trying to explain the process by which this world is created and where you came from. This is actually tied up with the Four Noble Truths. This is all part of the First Noble Truth, suffering. The world is suffering.
Yeah. So, if I may pick up on what John was saying, an appropriate title for this section with these three would be the prevalent theories during Vasubandhu's time of creation, or at all times, so the arguments against karma.
By the way, I didn't speak much about it last time, and I wanted to, but, you know, people ask me, why don't we just buy one of those translations that come out of universities and use those, you know, and I say, well, I have a problem with most of them. What is it? And here's one of the big problems is this. If you read Chankya Rupa Dorje's explanation of the four schools, you have to think of the four schools as, these are a design by an omniscient being to try to relate to all the possible kinds of beings there are in the world throughout all history. He's using these four. You know, in other words, he's using those four, and the first chapter of the Dharma says it, because that's the nature of people's minds. There's four kinds of mindsets that can relate to each one of those schools. And it's not a historical thing. It's not like, Nagarjuna, 200 AD, he thought up Madhyamika, and then, 400 years later, Dharmakirti had a good idea, and he added that. And it's not like that. It's an omniscient being designing four schools for four states of mind of being. He can see 2,000 years later what people are going to need, and he designed it that way. Normally, it's not just a historical debate between Chavakas and Buddhists in 8th century India. They tend to be universal wrong ideas that beings have throughout history. Otherwise, the Buddha wouldn't have designed it.
It's like the three most likely three possibilities if you don't believe in karma.
Very common.
Whether those days or even now.
Yeah. It seems to be a thing that people have. They tend to want to believe in these things.
The three greatest misconceptions about creation.
Okay. We happen to be, our culture is pretty much into this one, in the religious side, and I would say into... Which one for the Big Bang, if you're a scientist? Maybe you talk about it. Maybe you're into the big, cause of all causes.
It used to be that, but now they're saying the bang, bang, bang. It's always been going along, it just goes out, the explosion
goes
all
I can never see why if there was one Big Bang, there couldn't be one before it, so that's one half of what he wants to do with that statement. He's trying to do two things. As usual, we call Namchiki Gupta and Yongchiki Gupta. He's trying to say the world didn't come from those things. The world didn't come from those things. Your office at work didn't come from one of these things. You made it, and you have to eat it. And you got to get in that mind frame, It's not like a guilt trip. It's like intelligence. So you can have a better office later. Okay? That's what the world didn't come from. Then on the other side, what's he going to say? Now here's where it came from. As usual, there's a negative goal and a negative point to a Buddhist statement, and there's a positive point. He's denying that the world came from these things, and he wants to prove that it came from karma. Say, Dini. Daini means that. Daini means that, meaning karma. That, and then Semba. You're going to get to know Semba very well, okay? What's the Tibetan word for mind? Sem. Sempa is not the same as sem. Okay, be careful. Right? Sem means mind. Sempa means a totally different thing. Right? People get it confused all the time. Sempa is a movement of the mind. It's called, in Tibetan, it's called Yula Chopa. Sem Yula Chopa. Sem means mind. Yula means object of the mind. not choke on these. It turns the mind to the new object. Semi-yula choke. That's the, and the function of it, the function of Semba is to motivate physical and verbal karma.
So when they talk about the karma of body, speech, and mind, it's the karma of mind that generates the karma of body, speech.
That's the whole point. This is his next line. I'll repeat it. We'll talk about it more. So the virtual karma, you know, the real karma that's running things is Semba. Semba is any the movement of the mind.
What do the emotions fit into that body, speech, mind?
They are different. They are different mental functions that will be linked with Semba at all times. Semba is always present in the mind. And according to Abhidharma, there's five mental functions that are always present in the mind. They never go away. They will never go away.
So they're part of the movement of the mind, whereas the
mind
speech,
is always moving.
Whereas the speech and the body are separate.
Yeah.
Are separate.
Yeah. So the motivator, the source, is Semba. Semba. Dhamma means and. A and D.
Okay.
Dhan means dang.
Dang
means and. And Deche means what it does, what it motivates. Okay. What it motivates. And then the next line says, Viki, Leyeno.
Leyeno.
Semba.
Semba.
Viki.
Viki.
Leyeno.
Leyeno.
Okay.
Michael.
Yeah.
It's not
Semba,
it's like
a BP. It's not a B and it's not a P. You'll have to come to Zen class to learn about that. Okay. Semba means that, we'll call it movement of the mind, okay? Is yin. You go to the end of a Tibetan sentence for the verb. Yikile. Yikile means karma of the mind. Karma of the mind. So how do those three lines go? So try to digest it. All the planets in the world come from karma. Karma is when your mind moves and anything that motivates in your speech or body. The movement of the mind is what mental karma is. That's his first three lines. He's setting up the whole presentation of karma right there. When your mind moves, you commit mental karma. And those movements inspire you to say something like a bad joke and hurt someone's feelings, which I do all the time, or move your arm, steal something, give something, kill something, protect life. But it's all, the driver is up in the mind, Semba. Okay? Movement in the mind, mental karma. So mental karma drives bodily karma and verbal karma. Those are the only three kinds there are. Those are what we call the three doorways. It's the only three ways you can express yourself.
Would you say that sentence again?
Does it happen also when you're at the Rishi Buddha house?
Yeah. In this school, there's a thing called pure karma. But that's a long story.
But you still have the movement.
You still think. There was a school in Tibet that said the Buddha didn't have a mind. Because they had a problem with that. But of course the Buddha thinks. He thinks in a different way. His thoughts are spontaneous. But he still... He still thinks. Yes.
So that karma is only caused by, impure minds or stained minds.
Depends on which school you're in. The Madhyamika and Lower Madhyamika school talks a lot about it, and we'll talk about it later. They say it has to be. They say there's two kinds of mental karma. One is motivated by kleshas, and one is not. Those that are motivated by kleshas are dirty karma, and those that are not motivated by karma by kleshas are pure karma. There's a long story.
Could you just
not throw
that?
Yes.
Yeah.
The world, I'm going to paraphrase, okay?
Yeah.
The world of the universe come from karma. Karma is any movement of the mind and the things which it inspires. That refers to bodily and verbal actions. You know, the things which it inspires. That's what it refers to. Karma with your body and karma with your mouth.
And this is, you know, this is a very different sentence than the sentence we had two courses ago when we just had, you know, six word the original root sentence that said karma is movement of the mind, you want to follow us. So what's the difference? What are they trying to say?
Same thing. Any symbol that And the third sentence there is, when the mind moves, that's what mental karma is. That's mental karma. That's karma in the mind.
So what do they mean by that? When the mind moves, when it's changing? What does it mean?
Having a thought. But I it's described in scriptures as when the mind goes to another object.
When what?
When the mind moves to another object. When the mind shifts. I like to go like that and say, you know, that's kind of mental karma. You know, when your mind goes like that, the shifting. The most minute shifting
so what
of the mind.
People
like karma by the millisecond.
Okay, so if the mind, I mean, to me, the mind is, you know, in a pure way, or in an early stage, you know, before we get into judgment, we're in learning, you know, a child, right? See something, try to understand, what is it? You know, it seems to me that one of the primary functions of the mind is not judgment, or is you know, doing something bad, but is trying to understand the world. Now, why does that cause bad karma?
I didn't say bad, I said karma.
But you know what I mean?
Don't think of karma as
pure...
bad. Don't think of karma as bad.
Okay, but
don't even think of karma as... I mean, there are pure kinds of karma.
It seems like a lot of what mind does is trying to understand.
That's neutral. You know, if you're trying to understand the causes of AIDS to cure a lot of people, it's a great virtue. Now, if you're trying to understand how to make money, how to cheat your friends, you know, that's a non-virtue. If you're just a pure scientist and you just want to know, that's called neutral. There is such a thing. Okay, one more, and then we gotta go.
Isn't it the case that the mind, when you're talking about the movement of mind, that it's a lot of what is contained in that is stuff that we would consider unconscious, in the sense of when we say a thought is something we have a self-consciousness of having thought, oh, I'm hungry, what time is it? But they're also, to my understanding, like very minute things that are happening on what we would consider a subconscious.
He talks about that. I mean, some of the books talk about that. They say, for example, sometimes you're going to be speaking and not thinking I'm speaking. I mean, they describe a subconscious awareness that you're speaking and that is also karma. Okay.
Finally, the mental karma is motivating physical and verbal karma.
It's running the machine, yeah.
Right. So, does a mental karma only produce either a verbal karma, a physical karma, or another mental karma? If you don't act on it, let's just say, then it produces instead another mental karma?
If you control yourself or something like that?
Yeah, if you have the mental karma to say something to somebody and
you
don't
stop.
Say it for one whatever reason,
right.
It didn't produce a verbal karma.
Well, I'm going to talk about that right now.
Okay, so...
Can it do
two at the same time? Can
right.
it create
absolutely.
Another mental karma
yeah.
and yet a verbal
absolutely.
Karma?
Absolutely, yeah.
Fine.
Actually, it can create four different results, but we'll get to that.
Okay,
I'll do one more thing, then we'll take a break. I'm actually being very good about following the process. I have time for it. So if I were to ask you, what are the two most basic kinds of deeds, what would you say? I mean, based on that last line I gave you.
Say the question again?
It's called Sembele and Sambele. Sembele is mental karma.
Mm-hmm.
Sambele is... You can think of sembele as thoughts, and sambele as what you thought to do. Does it give you some feeling? One is thinking to do something, and one is what you do by thinking, meaning verbal and physical. So there's this big division. Over here is mental karma, which is thinking karma. And over here is what they call thought karma, meaning thinked.
Oh, having
what
you
thought to do, which means mental, which means verbal and physical karma.
Are you saying that this has already happened after you've had the thought, then you speak it and you act it?
Yeah. So the speaking and the acting are all considered the second type of karma, motivated karma. And the first side is called motivating karma.
which is mental karma. So they got this big division. So samayasya anahama, what are the two kinds? You can say motivating karma and motivated karma. How's that? You see, one is the thought that's actually running the truck, and one is the truck that's being run. Okay, the deeds that come out.
You're calling these the two kinds of karma? Is that what you're calling?
Yeah, the most basic division of karma. There's motivating karma, which is the thought. And then there's the physical and verbal deeds that motivating karma motivates.
It's just as bad to generate like a tremendous amount of hate towards somebody, even if you don't kill them or remove anything. Is that considered just as bad for your?
There's a lot of detail about that. I will talk about it. We'll talk about that. That's in the, I think it's in the 8th or 9th class. We're going to talk about how does your mind frame affect the severity of the deed, and it talk a lot about it. Is anger itself a karma? No, is ignorance itself a karma? That's a big subject. Is it virtuous or non-virtuous or neutral? Ignorance itself is very big argument.
It's not caused, right? You've always had it.
That doesn't mean it's not caused. In fact, that might be a reason why it had to be caused.
Well, how could you have always had it if it was
it kept causing earlier instances caused later. Okay. Are you called?
Yes.
People in the back will call.
I'll
turn it down to you. You don't have to write this to that. You have to write any of that. Say, number K?
Number K.
Number K.
Number K. Mahimba.
You know, this was the first book I ever read in Tibet. And I remember it. And Rinpoche would teach me in the early morning. He would go to school in the morning, and she'd come back in the evening. And I had to spend the whole day trying to figure out what he said. He didn't speak any English at the time. And when I got to this, it was very difficult. Namba Rinpoche means, I have translated it as communicating as an adjective, okay? And I'll explain it. What's Mayimba?
Not communicating.
Yeah, non-communicating. Okay. Now what does that mean? Obviously it's pretty confusing.
You mean communicative?
I'll tell you what it means. It means communicating the intent of the doer, or not. It's form, physical form, color and shape, okay, which communicates the intention of the doer, of the person who does it. And I'll give you an example. Okay.
Which one are you talking about?
Namba Rinpoche is communicating. It means if you walk into a church and you see somebody there on their knees going like this, that's Namba Rinpoche. Why? It communicates to you that they have some spiritual intention. As you look at them, you may be wrong, of course. They may be waiting to meet their crack dealer or something. But normally, this is a number that changes too. You know, all those movies where the mafia guys pray next to each other and plan. Not like that. It means the actual shape of the person, the outline of what the person's doing, communicates to you something about their intention.
Correct.
The other example is prostration. You know, if somebody's standing here and getting down on the ground, you know, you from that picture of that person communicates to you that he has some good intention. That's called namarichya.
You said through color and form?
It's actually the shape. You can think of it as the outline of that person. In this school, we'll talk about it more. So the actual picture of that person doing that thing communicates to you that he has some virtuous intent.
You like people dancing or communicate happiness or something like that?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
So when you say communicates, in this sense, accurately communicates?
They don't even get into it. You see, skip schools, okay? You're not back in karma anymore. is Abhidharma, very basic, you know. They don't even talk about, well, he might be fooling you.
So it triggers triggers some kind of understanding in you, whether that's correct or not.
They don't discuss it.
So a shape that triggers an understanding in you.
A shape which allows you to impute, can I say impute? Some kind of motivation on the person who's
performing. Does it have to be of a person, or could it be at a tree? Does it have to be
a tree? He's blowing a tree and the tree's bent over.
I'm going to talk about that after the break. Number two, Mayimba. By the way, it's fine if you cough. I respect that you came. And that's fine. If I get a gym, we're going to break the list. Number two, Mayimba.
Okay.
Is a very interesting idea that only the Abhidharma schools have. And they believe that when you perform some very good deed or bad deed, some kind of form, some kind of extra, what do you call that thing in the New Age stuff?
Halo?
Aura. Yeah. It's like an aura. An aura, forms in you. The moment after the number of it, and I'll give an example. A monk goes before an abbot, a layman, and he gets down, and the abbot cuts his hair, and the monk takes his vow. He repeats them three times, he has his vow. Okay. As he's repeating those vows after the abbot, you know, as he's taking his vows, that's number rikche. If you came in the room suddenly and saw what he's doing, you say, oh, somebody's taking vows, that's great. He has a virtuous intention. But what happens when he gets up and he walks out of the room and you meet him?
He's still going to buzz.
He still has this, what they call, aura is not a bad word actually, because they describe it as being like light, as stretching from the bottom of the feet to the top of the head, as staying with the person, doesn't make him fatter or heavier, they say. You know, there's a question, you know, and it's somehow with him, and it's actually an outline.
And how long does it last?
Well, in that case, it lasts till he dies. I mean, if he took a vow till he dies. They say, this school says, the nature of that vow is that it's that outline that stays with him throughout his life.
Yeah, that's it.
This idea is not accepted by any other Buddhist school. But
I like it.
I think it's a very useful idea. I used to think of it as a cosmic photograph, you know, that when I did something good or bad, because we grew up with this God idea, right? Mm-hmm. That someone's taking a picture, you know, and that picture somehow stays somewhere. You know, like, I better watch out what I'm doing, because there are these pictures being taken, you know. It's not a, maybe that's the kind of thought they had in mind when they described this kind of number like chain mayimba. An example is the vows of a monk. You know, what are the vows of a monk? How do they stay on me? Where are they?
It could be like saying energetically you're affected, is that the idea?
They're trying to say there's some kind of energy which is sticking on you, but it's matter.
But the idea is not that you change your own energy, but you get something from outside?
No, you actually, it's like a cloak.
It comes to you from the outside.
Yeah, and it's actual physical matter. We can't see.
Well, what are we collecting cloaks all the time? Or they merge with each other? Or, I don't know.
Hey, you go with the Abhidharma.
Is this, you destroy
go
the
to Sri Lanka and talk.
You can destroy the soul by doing bad deeds.
We're going to talk about it a lot.
Does this have anything to do with creating different bodies?
No, that's totally different. Okay.
Do they consider light matter?
Yes. It's one of the kinds of color. It's one of the divisions of color.
And, I mean, if the monk degenerates, breaks their vows, does the cloak degenerate, or does it...
Yeah, it disappears.
Can they
can destroy. Right. You know, you can damage it, too. When a monk breaks his vows, it's damaged.
Someone told me you can take a picture and you can see the aura, you can see the color.
They say you cannot see it. It's not many people either.
With your eyes.
You can't
look at Michael Roach when he's dressed up.
No,
like a
but this is a special photo.
Oh, he's a monk. Yeah
curly and
yeah,
the Russian
curly. Yeah.
They take the leaves.
Okay. Okay, take a break quick. And,
Michael, have you ever heard of Colombian photography? I just heard it the other day.
Sounds expensive.
I've been around a long time.
All these neat computer things I want.
This is called not communicating?
Yeah. It starts the moment after he takes the vow. The moment after he does the communicating, then he stands up and he's walking around and that's
somehow that vow is still...
Not communicating in the sense that he's not doing anything specific that would make you interpret.
Right.
But you see...
I used to call it uninterpretable form. But it was too long. In other words, you can't look at me... If I'm dressed as a layman and you look at me, there's nothing that can tell you that I have this virtue intent, that I have vows to be
on this. That's not...
But you can communicate it to yourself.
People,
yeah. Not apparent.
Not apparent.
What about
right.
the four? So the people, like, you know, like,
they're pushed away
in the center? Is that...
Talk about this. We've got to have five qualities, which you're going to have to memorize, actually, of this stuff. And we're going to do that after this. That'll be your last thing. I like the idea. I think it's a useful idea. What are we going to call this stuff?
What's
the translation you guys like?
Which stuff?
Non-communicating...
Uninterpretable. Yeah, I like
uninterpretable. Oh, can you see it, though, is the point.
Subtle.
It's interpretable to the person.
Subtle.
Yeah.
Subtle.
I like that.
Not
what's
obvious.
Its relationship to other people?
Well, I'll tell you what. Often he's describing it.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Yeah,
so this stuff. Well, we got stuff in the last course.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah, kind of. Alright, so yeah.
Well, what are these things?
We're describing. I'm now going to give you five qualities. Aura.
The second one.
But what are these two things? These rajas, this case.
The two kinds of verbal. I should have said that. I didn't say that. Verbal or physical.
Oh.
Karma. I should have said that. I didn't say that.
Two kinds of.
Good question.
Two kinds.
Verbal and physical karma can be divided into those two.
You're not saying that one corresponds to verbal and one corresponds to physical.
No, I'm not saying that. See, there's a verbal rite and namrita marima, and there's a physical namrita and namrita. And you can guess what they are, you know? Like the words of the monk speaking as his lips move, you know, that's supposed to be the verbal one. You know, and the form of him bending down and clasping his hands, those are
communicating.
And non-communicating is the moment after he's got that aura of that vow. The verbal thing takes its own aura, the physical thing takes its own aura.
So every...
I'm going to... Wait.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm anticipating... Let me finish. Then you'll get... I think I know what you're going to ask. So it's all karma act like that. Yang dan semi bayang yang 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 kang dan. That's the verse, first part of the verse. Yang dan semi bayang. That's the first quality. Okay, the first quality is yang dan semi bayang. Yangla means literally distraction.
First quality of what? Of non-parikya?
Now we're describing the five qualities of this very special idea that only Abhidharmas have, which is that there's some kind of, aura is a nice word, I like it, because they actually explain it as a kind of light or that you can't see, you know, that sticks with the person, the whole outline of his body. Sometimes they say it's like the oil in an oil seed, like an oil in the oil in a sesame seed. It's just like permeates it. Yeah. It's something like, and it's light. It is color, but you can't see it. And stuff like that.
Could you just call it an energy field?
I like kind of like aura actually. Aura is almost pretty close to that. I don't know. What do you think about it?
Now, is this only for good, or could you have a bad aura?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
So yang means. Distraction. So the first quality of Namrita Chaimahime Sukh, the first quality of this special aura, is that even when you're not thinking about it, it's there. Even when your mind is on something totally different, that still stays. And that the root text says, even in periods of distraction. But it doesn't mean, you know, here distraction is a little bit strong. It just means, even when I'm not aware of my Tao, my monk's vow, that the aura is still there. Yen dang sen mei ba yang. Sen mei ba means, what does sen mean?
Mind,
not sen ba, right? Now we're back to sen. What does mepa mean? Kai li no.
Mepa?
Not.
Mei is a negative.
Negative, yeah. Not. And it's, you have it even when you don't have a mind. Now, is that possible? Not to have a mind. Is it possible for a living being not to have a mind?
Since
you have it even when your mind is missing. And so the Abhidharmas say, of course, you must have a mind. We proved that in the last class. Right. You never lose your mind, literally. Yeah.
So it means there are certain kinds of deep, deep meditation in which your mental processes are almost stopped. And that's called semmedita. It's called mindless, I shouldn't say mindless, no mind meditation. But it doesn't mean that your mind is gone. It doesn't mean that your mind is stopped. It means that your mind is on an extremely subtle level. So even in those states, at oneness with that person. So not only, that's the second quality. So in the first quality, you're not thinking about it. But the second quality is that even when your mind is almost shut down, you still have that aura. It doesn't go away. So even in periods of deep meditation, very deep meditation. There's this big debate, you know, when you're seeing emptiness directly, do you still have bodhicitta, for example? Bodhicitta is supposed to remain mind. There's these big debates, you know, do certain mental states get lost when you're in deep meditation? So that was the second quality. Geta mige means it has an ethical component. It is either virtuous or non-virtuous.
What's the Tibetan word now?
Geta mige. Kamindam. Gedam mige. That's the third one.
Gedam
mige. It's either virtue or non-virtue.
Gedam mige.
Yeah, it's either a good deed or a bad deed. There are things in the universe which are morally neutral. This pen is morally neutral. We call it tamyo. It's not a good deed, it's not good. You know, it's not a good thing, or it's not good or bad. It's not evil or good. But this aura has to be one or the other. What's an example of a bad aura? In the Abhidharma later, Abhidharma in the fourth chapter gives a whole presentation on vows. I'm not going to do it in the karma chapter. I'm going to do it as a separate course for you. But it describes all the vows you can take, all the morality vows you can take. And it describes anti-vows. And that's, they give two examples. One is to say, okay, I swear I'll be a butcher for the rest of my life. Like you go sign up for butcher school and say, okay, I'm signing up because I intend to, you know, slit animals' throats for the rest of my life. You know? Which was, you know, existed. And then that guy, when he walks into the school and he signs a paper and says, I'm going to sign up, I commit myself to this occupation, he gets a number of chimai misu performed on him. And that's called an anti-vow. The other one is when you join the military. And you say, I will fight, you know, I agree to kill people in defense of my country. And that's a classical example of a number of chimai misu, the vow for, you get an aura, an anti-vow aura forms on you. And then when you are dismissed from the service, it disappears.
All of your examples have been about vows.
Yeah.
Are there situations where...
I'm trying to think. Normally, they're talking about it being... Normally, it comes up in discussions of very severe karma. You know, I'll have to see.
Well, if you talk
but
about...
But even in cases of a prostration, they say. Or even in the case of a lie, I think... Some kind of photograph is taken, and it stays with you.
When you
is it karma itself? You know, is it the transmission karma? No, that's not how karma boomerangs, according to the number. Let me look. Let me check. Let me ask what this here, because I'm not sure. I have the feeling it has to be a pretty severe. I think the motivation has to be pretty strong for the aura to fall. I'm not sure.
So what happens if it does?
Well, it depends on... It disappears.
Yeah. As far as joining...
In the case of the vow.
As far as joining the military, is it totally considered no difference in value, whether it's a very just reason, you're really trying to save people's lives, or whether it's...
We're going to reach that. We're going to have it in this course. I'll say this. It's coming. They actually describe this question separately. What is the responsibility of a person who participates even with a virtuous intention, or even as a non-combatant? You know, how much karma does he collect relative to the people actually shooting the gun?
Doesn't this idea of what's good and what's bad tie into the emptiness and there is no good and bad? So this whole concept that we're structuring here of good and bad is
the whole point of the karma court. is to oh boy, no. That's
oh, I got heresy. I'm mixed up here.
Right?
Oh,
jeez.
Because
of emptiness, there is good and bad. Okay. I mean, we're going to get to that. That's why we actually made a separate class out of it. I mean, that's going to be one class of this course is going to be devoted simply to that subject.
I have to give up all of the things.
Never, never. I heard this story. I read this story in the book about Buddhism. And the lady said she got caught taking towels out of a hotel from a Buddhist conference. And she said it doesn't matter. They're all empty anyway. And that's the ultimate ignorance. You know, that's it's because they're empty, it does matter. You know, and that's another story. Okay. The next quality, what are we up to? Number four is Jadel. Jadel means continues on in a stream.
Jadel or Jadrel?
Jadel. Jadel, actually.
Jadel.
And what it means is they argue about. What it means is it continues on after the moment of, the first moment is number che. I take the vow, I'm saying something. If someone sees my lips moving, they can interpret me. But then, you know, somehow it streams on. It follows on after me. Even though I move, you know, that.
The aura.
Yeah, streaming on, following on. It's not like a discrete moment and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. It continues. As I walk around, it goes around.
It continues in space and time.
Yeah.
Does it dissipate over time?
They don't say anything like that. I mean, if I take a vow for life, then if I keep it, then when I die, it disappears.
Yeah, so if you take a vow for two lives, it'll stay.
There is no such vow. I mean, there's no such Abhidhamma vow.
So if you took the bodhicitta vow, it would only last for one life, and you'd have to start all over
there's
again.
They don't have bodhicitta vow. There's no such question in the Abhidhamma system.
In this system.
There's no such thing. They don't talk about it. There is no vow in the Abhidhamma system which doesn't end when you die.
What about when you say, "Now, until
attaining
the heart of enlightenment, I take refuge"?
That sounds. I don't know. I don't remember. Let me check.
Are they on a formula for refuge?
I understand, yeah. Maybe it would stay with you for more than one life. It's a good question. I'll check. Seemed to me it would, but I don't know how.
But maybe they just say, you know, it's like trying to say that was some intention.
Okay, fifth quality is Juwan Chimba Yuching Nin, which means. Do you remember that discussion we had about the elements?
The one is degenerating faster than we thought.
I wonder if
he changed it to that. Yeah.
I hope not. I was wondering if something means.
Yeah,
because
there's a whole book.
That was the
one.
Green
color.
Did it go into the house?
There are several.
The Buddha
maybe
was
it was
there.
Okay. Well, we don't have a demo box, do we? I hope the game won't be. Okay. Anyway, the last we talked about the wall and the four elements inside. You know, acting in the wall: the hardness, the wetness, the non. You know, the four qualities, Satchi Menu, earth, water, fire, and wind. Okay. And that actually they describe actual physical energies within all physical matter. And that it wasn't just some silly thing that they thought there was little fires burning in the walls and something like that. So the last quality of Namara Chimayim is Sukh, is that it has those four elements as its causes. It's made of those four elements. So it's physical matter. This is a very special idea.
Do all four have to be present?
In the Abhidhamma system, all matter has all four, and some other stuff too. And it's just the predominance of one that makes something hard or wet. All atoms have the four. Even individual atoms have all four, according to the Abhidhamma school.
Do they believe that Buddhas or Bodhisattvas can see them?
Can do what?
It can see the sara in people?
I haven't seen anything about it. I don't. Buddhas can see it because it's a thing. Bodhisattvas, they don't talk about much. They do have the word bodhisattva. But I, you know, They don't describe them much. Now, could a person have seen emptiness maybe see it or something?
Yeah, like a stream entry.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't talk. I check. I don't remember anything like that. Okay, we should...
And they're layered on top of each other if you take a lot of different...
Yeah, and then, this evening I was reading this thing. It's in a great Sakya commentary. The Sakya commentaries did this. I don't remember anything like that. Okay, we should...
And they're layered on top of each other if you take a lot of different...
Yeah, and then this evening I was reading this thing. It's in a great Sakya commentary. The Sakya commentaries did this. The one Sakya commentary that this is the best in the universe. And he says that there was a big argument about whether it would make you... You know, if you add more deity, would you get heavier or fatter? They piled on. And he said, no, it's just like more light. And it doesn't have any effect. You can't measure it by weight or by how... You know, it's not like the person gets bigger as these clothes get piled on. It's not like that. And then he says, sero. Sero means they claim. And Vasubandhu, at the end of the verses that he knows are false in the Abhidhamma Kosha, he puts this naro, which means they say. You know, so that's a code for all. He was a Mahayana person. You know, he identifies for you the verses where he doesn't really accept what they're saying. But he records it quite nicely. Okay, Kaila, you're the Ude for the ending.
Quick question. Do these five reasons apply to both communicating and not communicating?
Yeah.
No. No, only not communicating.
Communicating is normal.
Sanchi Bhagi Jashin Neta Shang Vira Vinci Nyande Yampa
Class 2.